and now another famous literary recluse.
Catcher in the Rye caught my attention when it first came out.
There had not been a voice like that.
Nobody sells 60 million copies of a book and disappears, but J.D. Salinger did.
He turned his back on celebrity before celebrity was celebrity.
Became the Howard Hughes of his day.
J.D. Salinger, the author of the classic novel The Catcher in the Rye, kept a famously low profile in life, and even after death. Now, Shane Salerno has uncovered a few of his secrets in a documentary and a companion book called Salinger. And Strange Champs talks with him.
So Salinger has been written about before, and there have been biographies. There have been people who knew him, have editors, former lovers, children have written articles and memoirs. What do you think are the most important things that you've added to his story or changed?
The difference between our book and those books were largely that in some of those cases, several of those cases, particularly recent cases, they wrote a whole book without ever speaking to one person who actually knew J.D. Salinger. They were sort of companion books or sort of compilation books of what was in the public record. I think what we did that was very different is we spent years and years convincing people to tell their stories for the first time. And we interviewed people who had held on to their stories entirely, whose name didn't even appear in the public record associated with Salinger for 60 years. So you have someone like Jean Miller, who met Salinger when she was 14 years old in 1949 and really dated him between the ages of 14 and 19. It wasn't sexual until she was of age, but they had a romantic relationship from 14 to 19.
And he was how old?
He was 30 when he met her and 35 when they split up. Jean, who's a wonderful lady, she originally had over 100 letters from Salinger, but she had kept about 50 of the letters and had never shown them to anyone. He had this extraordinary relationship with this young girl, and it was interesting time, 49 of 54, because it was prior to the publication of The Catcher in the Rye and after it, prior to moving to Cornish, New Hampshire, and after it. And so you get this incredible vantage point of this soldier back from World War II with post-traumatic stress syndrome trying to connect with this 14-year-old girl.
You say you still feel 14. I know the feeling. I'm 34, and too much of the time I still feel like a 16-year-old Holden Caulfield.
And she becomes the inspiration for Esme, and he ends up telling her that he could have never written Esme without her.
Esme for Love and Squalor, one of the famous short stories. One of the things that you discovered that you write about a lot is how important Salinger's experiences in World War II were to him. You came to see it as really central to his writing and much of the rest of his life. What exactly did he do in World War II?
Well, I mean, let's just start with what he saw. This was a kid who grew up at 1133 Park Avenue. He had never suffered a day in his life. He was a privileged, very wealthy kid. He went to war thinking that it was going to be this romantic experience, like a Jack London novel. And what he found instead was really the worst horrors of World War II. J.D. Salinger's first day of combat was D-Day. He ended up participating in one form or another in D-Day, the Battle of San Lo, the Battle of the Hurricane Forest, Battle of the Bulge.
Did he actually see much action?
Yes. At different times he did see action. At different times he was under fire. He was a counterintelligence agent, not an infantryman. So he wasn't on the front lines every day, but he definitely saw combat. He definitely was under fire.
He was also one of the first Americans to see some of the German concentration camps, am I right?
Yes, he walked in among the first soldiers to walk into a subcamp of Dachau called Kaufering. And in the film and the book, we show for the first time ever what he actually saw. And that experience was so traumatic. The quote that he told his daughter and also Jean Miller and others was that you never get the smell of burning flesh out of your nostrils, no matter how long you live. And that was so traumatic that he checked himself into a mental institution immediately after the war.
How long did he stay?
He stayed for about 6 months. And what's amazing is, in the middle of all of this, he was writing and publishing throughout the war in Collier's and the Saturday Evening Post. And that was kind of an incredible thing to see. Not that just somebody who was jotting down some things in a journal, but he was actually writing and seeing his stories published. And there's a very famous story we have in the film, in the book, in 1944, after the liberation of Paris, Salinger wanting to meet Ernest Hemingway, who was staying at the Ritz and assigned to Salinger's 4th Division, and Salinger pushing through a crowd to get to Hemingway and hand him his Collier story. And they become close friends. Salinger, if you can believe this, J.D. Salinger and Ernest Hemingway.
And didn't you say that Salinger actually went to battle with some of the chapters of The Catcher in the Rye with him?
They never left his side. I mean, when he landed on D-Day, he landed with the first 6 chapters of The Catcher in the Rye. And we know that from a letter that he wrote to Whit Burnett, his teacher at Columbia. Those pages saw all of the battles that I named and walked into that concentration camp at the end of the war.
So what's interesting is that for all that his war experiences really marked him, we don't think of him as a war writer. I mean, I can't remember in any of the stories or in Catcher in the Rye, I don't think any of them are set in battlefields or wartime experiences.
Well, they're set with wartime experiences, but they're not set on the battlefield. He only really wrote of actual combat one time, which was in an unpublished story called The Magic Foxhole that we excerpt in the book. World War II is really the ghost in the machine of all those stories. They are the answers to issues in Perfect Day for Banana Fish and Esme, and certainly the 9 stories, which begin and end with echoes of World War II.
Wait, what do you mean? Why do you think the war is the ghost in the machine in a lot of his writing?
The characters are soldiers in several of the key stories. Some of those soldiers have the same dog tag numbers that Salinger had. The issues of depression and suicide that permeate some of those stories are rooted in the fact that J.D. Salinger was suffering from depression and post-traumatic stress syndrome. In The Catcher in the Rye, he talks very much about the war and says if there's another war, he wants to get on the bomb and ride it all the way down himself, climb on top of it and ride it all the way down himself, which, of course, Stanley Kubrick took quite literally for Dr. Strangelove. If it wasn't for World War II, we would have never heard the name J.D. Salinger. I mean, before World War II, J.D. Salinger was a serviceable short story writer. In fact, he never allowed those early pre-war stories to ever be published in book form because he called them the gaucheries of his youth. It's only after the war, after the mental institution, after all of the horrors that he saw, that he becomes J.D. Salinger and has that extraordinary voice. And that's when we get Banana Fish and Esme and Catcher and the 9 stories.
Well, in the first place, he said it was a perfect crime the Army released him, Seymour, from the hospital. My word of honor. He very definitely told your father there's a chance, a very great chance, he said, that Seymour may completely lose control of himself. My word of honor.
There's another weird story that comes out of his time during World War II. It's the story of his first wife. This was a woman he met during the war, and you suggest that she might have been a Gestapo informant?
After the mental institution, J.D. Salinger did something that no one else would really do. I mean, after everything that he had seen and having checked himself into a mental institution, most people would have gone home. And what he did, and when I found this out, this is when I really said I have to make this film. What Salinger did that was so unique is he signed back up for more. He signed up a post-war contract to be part of the denazification of Germany. And in the process of really trying to hunt the people down that did these horrible things, he met and married a German woman named Sylvia Welter and brought her home legally to his parents' Jewish Park Avenue apartment with a big German dog. And tried to integrate the two worlds that he had seen, the world that existed before the war and the world that existed for him now.
That marriage lasted, what, a year less?
It was a very short marriage, and in the process of spending time with her in New York, he found out that she had actually been an agent for the Gestapo, And we interviewed several people who confirmed this on the record, including Leela Hadley, a very close friend of his, and someone who actually dated him. And, you know, immediately upon finding this out, he filed for an annulment and really sent her back to Germany. The public record for 50 years has been that they filed for divorce and she went back, but it's not true at all. We actually recovered and found and published the annulment papers, which we found in Germany, in German, and had to translate. And he would not have anything to do with her ever again. And in fact, around his house called her Saliva instead of Sylvia.
We should talk about Salinger's notorious penchant for privacy. He's often considered, you know, one of the most famous literary recluses in history. He publishes Catcher in the Rye, becomes an almost overnight celebrity, and everybody in America knows who he is. And then at the height of all of this, he disappears.
One of the myths we dispel in the film and the book is that he was a recluse. He was not a recluse. And there was nothing reclusive about J.D. Salinger. What he was extraordinarily private.
What's the difference?
Well, there's a very big difference. Think of Howard Hughes, who was a true recluse. Howard Hughes would never do any of the things that J.D. Salinger did. I mean, J.D. Salinger traveled the world. J.D. Salinger had many affairs. He had lifelong friendships. He would go to everything from the church dinner every Sunday in his community, and he would see actresses on TV and fall in love with them and write them letters and go see them. Can you imagine Howard Hughes showing up at a Peter DeVries play and not only watching the play, but going backstage and introducing himself to the cast?
So why does everybody think Salinger was a recluse?
There's just a myth that has endured for decades that he was a recluse. The fact is he would go into New York City almost every week and have lunches. He would hang out with friends. There's just nothing reclusive about J.D. Salinger. But if you look up the word recluse, J.D. Salinger's name is the first thing that pops up. It's an extraordinary thing. Listen, he was very good at being a recluse who, whenever the world forgot about him for a minute, popped out to remind the world that he was a recluse.
Shane Salerno produced and directed the documentary Salinger and co-authored the companion book with David Shields. He spoke with Anne Strainchamps. Salerno tells us that new fiction by J.D. Salinger will be released between 2015 and 2020.